This is something that you're not going to hear me say very often. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. ESPN announced that they're, after the conclusion of The Last Dance this weekend, they'll be putting out a trio of new 30 for 30s over the next four Sundays. And there's a two-parter that I will not be watching. No, I could not be less interested in it, which is incredibly unusual.
Is it the Lance Armstrong one?
It's the Lance Armstrong one.
Yeah, I don't... We kind of touched on that a little bit over... It was Monday when I was in with Tyrone. We talked about it, and I don't have any... I don't have a whole lot of interest on it.
No. Well, and here's why. I find Michael Jordan to be a fascinating character. So regardless of whether it's a true documentary or not, more exposure to Michael Jordan's fascinating to me. I got totally turned off by how predatory Lance Armstrong was against everyone who ever said that he was cheating, anyone who ever cheated themselves. He was so aggressively predatory towards those people that whenever like the shoe dropped, I was like, okay, well, that's a dude who I never have to pay attention to ever again.
I would actually be way more interested because of how everything works in that sport specifically. Not Lance Armstrong is like a zoomed in lens. I would actually be more interested to view a documentary on the whole landscape of cycling and the biking industry because it was like doping central.
Well, they had to go like 90 people deep or something, right? To award a Tour de France winner.
And that's what I mean. Like, I would love to see a documentary on why it became so attainable, why it became so accepted, and how everybody started getting on it, and then kind of the fallout. And I would love to see the crackdown of what the Tour de France did and the cycling community did to get rid of it.
And by the way, Lance Armstrong would be a fascinating person to shed light on that sort of thing. I just have no confidence whatsoever that would be part of the 30 for 30. Like, I have no reason to believe that all of a sudden Lance Armstrong's like introspective regarding that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that. So when I was in high school, one of the books that we had to read was the Lance Armstrong book.
Mm-hmm.
And I got kind of the side of Lance Armstrong that was like the good guy side.
Sure.
You know, of course, it's his book. And there are certain aspects where you watch him go through a lot of his like struggles, but you know, obviously he had cancer and all that.
Yeah.
There's a human side to it. And then on the flip side, you're like, yeah, he is a terrible person. And I don't know if I really have any interest in viewing this.
I my generation, and like people who are older than me, but my generation was like the youngest one where everyone had a Livestrong band. Like 100% of people that I knew.
Right. Multiple, too. Different colors different days and different outfits.
Absolutely. So when that whole thing fell through, man, oh, man. Let's talk about happier things. Josh, how do you eat cupcakes and pizza, man?
Okay, so the cupcakes is an interesting one. It depends on the size of the cupcake.
Okay.
Now, I'm an icing guy, so I need to get cake and icing. But I don't want to have to, there's no worse feeling when you're eating and you have to like stress your jaw so much that you get like a Charlie horse. And you ever have that?
Of course, absolutely.
So what you have to do is you have to bite half of the cupcake on the bottom first. So just the cake part. That way for the rest of the cupcake, you can bite and you can get icing and cake.
Okay, so you're chopping it down to like digestible like size that you can fit the whole.
Put it down, like okay, you have a round. You know, the cupcake is round, right?
Yeah,
like almost like a ball, sort of. So you have to bite just the bottom, like half of the
right.
Bottom.
Yeah, like where the flat, like where it would sit on the table. You're like biting a chunk of that off.
Now you can hold it upright, and every bite you're getting icing and cake. For the rest of the cupcake, you know what I'm saying?
I gotcha. Are you intrigued at all by this person's idea that you like rip the cupcake in half and then smush all of the icing into the middle so that you have cake, icing, cake, and eat it that way? Is that interesting to you at all?
Just buy a cupcake with some icing in the middle.
That's how I feel. That's exactly right, Josh. All right, how about pizza?
Why are you being so difficult? The pizza is a little bit different, right? So, you know, I'm 31 years old. My metabolism isn't as fast as it used to be.
Join that club. Yep.
So if you fold pizza, you can literally eat a pizza in like four bites. And psychologically you think like, oh, that was, you know, I'm still, it didn't feel like one pizza. It's almost the same thing as like a bagel. Like bagels are kind of small, right? You get a bagel and cream cheese in the morning. Uh-huh. Like I can eat that thing in like four bites. So what I do is I have to like take it apart and eat the bagels in two separate halves to slow me down. So I don't like eat two or three bagels.
So your stomach has time to like catch up. That's what you're telling me. All right. Okay.
Okay. So what are we talking about sports wise? I literally turned you guys on. We were talking about eating food.
Pretty simple question for you, Josh. Assuming that you're an Eagles fan. So we're talking about the projections going into this season, and a lot of people have had them projected at like 9-7 range, which is, and they are kind of in the same area as they were before the 2017 season when they won the Super Bowl. So the question is, how do you feel about this team relative to the 2017 team in the preseason, knowing what you know about how 2016 ended with Dorial Green, Beckham, and you know everything else there, kind of the team facing the same challenges. Where are you with this team relative to where you were then?
Well, yeah, it's funny because we were just talking about that the other day with my friends. Like, it's similar teams. However, the expectations are so much greater this year, obviously. You know, Wentz is on his fourth year and whatnot. Like, I think going into the – we were expecting a big jump for Carson going into the 2017 year, which we did get.
Mm-hmm.
But we were, I think, 22-1 odds or something like that going into the season that year to win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like, we were expecting a playoff berth. We didn't expect this team to start off 12-1. Like, I think, like, because I was at the Thursday night game away in Carolina. I think that made us go 5-1. And after we won that game, it was just like, whoa, are we good? Like, we look at each other and we're like, are we good? You know? So if we start off 5-1 this year, then you know we know we're where we need to be.
Right, you've already laid a lot of that groundwork, Josh. Good stuff, man. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Yeah, and like that's kind of where I am too. Is like I have this understanding now that all right, we've seen what this team is when they're clicking and operating on full. You know, when they've got all things rolling, you know, when they're clicking on all cylinders. So for me, that's what I look at, and I think, well, if they're 5-1 with this schedule, especially, then you know why shouldn't you feel really good about their ability to not just make the playoffs, but make some noise once you get there? And to me, that's kind of what I'm looking at with this team, and that's why it is different. Like, we knew that things probably, especially offensively, were going to be better than they were in 2016. Right? Tyler said, you sign Alshon Jeffrey, even though that was like for a one-year deal and it was kind of unexpected that Jeffrey ended up signing with the Eagles and all that, you knew that he was going to be an upgrade over what you had. But we didn't know what the ceiling of that looked like. Now that you do, now that you know what it looks like when the Eagles are playing really well, when the Eagles are optimized, let's say, now the expectations can change more wildly even within the season, whereas it took people varying amounts of time. I was on them early, but varying amounts of time to learn how good the 2017 Eagles were and what that team was eventually capable of.
Right, and it's kind of funny that he mentioned that Carolina game, because that's exactly the sentiment I think a lot of us had, was because they beat, you know, Washington in the opener. It was a 13-point win, probably a little bit closer than what the score indicated. Lost to Kansas City. Had to win on a 63-yard Jake Elliott field goal to beat the Giants. Beat the Chargers by 2. That game maybe felt a little bit further than the score indicated. And then they stomped on the Cardinals, who we all knew weren't very good. So they were, what, 3-1 at that point, but I don't think any of us knew how good of a 3-1 team they were until, like he said, they went down on that short week, played Carolina. That was, for me, that was the Nigel Bradham coming out party.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Where he single-handedly won them that game. And that game right there was like, okay, yeah, this team might be legit.
Well, so here's what I'll say, and this is why I said that I was on them early, because we've got to remember, go back in time. With like where we were at the time, with what was going on, you know, during this run, because now we have the benefit of history, we have the benefit of context and everything, right? But when you look at the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles, they started out with, like you said, the 30-17 win against Washington. In that game, Carson Wentz threw the ball 39 times and they rushed 24 times in total, four of those being Carson Wentz. So that was a 2-to-1 pass-to-run ratio. And I remember thinking, all right, well, that can work against Washington. That's not going to work against good teams. Because you remember, back at the start of 2017, most people didn't know, myself included, didn't know whether Doug Peterson could coach at all. Remember when we were thinking that he was literally Andy Reid's, like all of Andy Reid's negative stuff, where it's like, this is a guy who's going to throw the ball a million times, doesn't stay committed to the run, that sort of thing. And then week two was the game where I got this close. I was this close to bailing on the Eagles and bailing on Doug Peterson for that season.
2 weeks into the season.
Yeah. And here's why, right? You look at what they did in the third quarter against the Kansas City Chiefs when it is a close game. Completely abandoned the run. 100% abandoned the run after the second quarter. I was stunned. Pass, 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 pass. Darren Sproles run. Pass, incomplete, punt. Pass, 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 pass. Run, run, pass. Touchdown. Pass. Pass, 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 run, pass, pass. In a three-point game, that was Carson Wentz. That was Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz in the third quarter of a three-point game. They ended up losing this game 27-20 because they were acting like they were down two touchdowns when it was a three-point game. Carson Wentz threw the ball 46 times. He carried the ball four times. That means that there were 13 called run plays. And I said, I'm done. This is the definition of not learning from your mistakes. We thought that he had made progress. Remember, in 2016, we thought that Doug had realized, hey, you're throwing the ball too much. You got to run the ball, whatever. It takes, after this game, the Eagles lost to Kansas City, for Carson and Zach Ertz and everybody else to come out and be like, oh, by the way, we need to run the ball a lot more. That's what it took in order for the adjustment to happen, which, by the way, it did. It happened the very next week. Carson Wentz threw the ball 31 times. They rushed 39 times. And I thought, whoa, message delivered. It was a tight game against the Giants, like you said, needed the long field goal. But they ran the ball. They adjusted. Doug Peterson listened to his team. I was not fully on in thinking that this team was incredible. Now, bearing in mind, I was ready to bail after the Kansas City game. The Chargers game, week four, or the fourth game, is the one that won me over. The Chargers game where they won 26-24, and it was an encore, effectively, of what they did against the Giants, where Carson threw the ball 31 times and there were 42 carries. I'm like, okay, this is the strength of the team and this is what's working. And then they won me over. The defense won me over.
That was the LeGarrette Blount game, correct?
The LeGarrette Blount
game. Huge game that day.
16 carries, 136 yards.
It was a huge game.
Massive game.
In that soccer stadium.
In the soccer stadium. By the way, that is... And I'm on the record. You can go back and look and pull the audio and stuff like that. That's when I believed. That's when I was like, this is one of the best teams in the NFL. Was week four. And it was 2 weeks after I was ready to pull the parachute plug on the team.
That's actually pretty amazing to me. And I mentioned that it was like, okay, this team could be good against Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It took, I think it was it may have been the following week or maybe 2 weeks after. It took, for me at least, until they romped Denver. And scored like 55 points on that Denver defense.
That was in November.
That's how long it took me to realize. Like, and they were winning games. They had beaten Washington again.
They were 7-1 going into that game. You didn't buy it?
No, I thought they were really good. I didn't know if they were Super Bowl really good or if they, other than a couple of games, were playing a third place schedule.
Gotcha. Okay.
That was my wonder.
Fair enough. Well, they beat the pants off of Arizona. Beat Carolina on the road in what was kind of, like a lot of people are saying, the signature win of the season. then there was no chance for Washington, San Francisco, or Denver heading into the bye week. Blew the pants off Dallas on the road.
By the way, that Dallas game, that 37-9 game, I believe at halftime it was 6-6.
I think it was.
Or maybe 9-6.
Well, let me see what the it was Dallas was ahead 9-7.
Okay, it was 9-7. There you go. So they scored 30 unanswered points.
Yep. Unanswered. That's exactly right.
Kamaru Grugier-Hill kicked in that game too.
Ah, yes, extra points. Chicago, 31-3. Seattle loss, as I said, final loss. I don't see a world where they beat Seattle. And then it was the Carson Wentz injury game the following. So there you go. That was kind of the way that things went. The point is that it took, at some point, between the most optimistic of us, from week four to Tyler, who I'd say is late at week nine, although maybe representative of the fan base, considering Negadelphia was running rampant at that time, that's kind of the range where it took. If the Eagles start out 3-4-1 or 3-5-0 or something like that, it will not take nearly that long for people to warm up to.
No, if the Eagles start 5-0 this year, it's all right. Carson's back.
Yes.
The Eagles are back. Doug Peterson's back. You know the names that that Doug got called when he was, you know, playing pretty aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was working.
Yes.
The complimentary names, I guess you could call them, that'll come back. Everything will come back quickly. It won't take 9 weeks this year.
No, not this time. But the other thing is that we have too much information now the other way, where I feel like we were hanging on the last 2 years to thinking like, you know, they get this right. They could be a Super Bowl team, rather than believing what your eyes tell you, where it's like, this team's okay. There are a lot of okay teams in the NFL, and okay teams aren't winning the Super Bowl. I feel like if there is a struggle, regardless of what the schedule is, I feel like if the team struggles and they're 2-3, God forbid, to start, people will have sniffed it out, and they'll be like, well, I'm upset, but I'm not surprised now, because this is just who this team is. Like, I'm worried that that potential exists as well.
I think that that's probably very true. The problem being this year is, going into last season, I think one thing that everybody held on hope to, and it ended up proving true, was, okay, if the Eagles get through this part, or this part, or this part of the schedule, at, you know, you name the record,
mm-hmm,
they've
mm-hmm.
got four divisional games that they could, if again, three against teams that are not very good.
Right, exactly.
If they could pull that off, then they'll be fine. This year, it's the inverse, where if they start poorly against teams like the Bengals and the Rams and Washington to start the season.
One that you got
to
have, too.
You have to beat, well, I think you have to either beat Pittsburgh or Baltimore.
Right, yeah, you got to have one of those.
Right, and if they start off 2-3 over that first five-game stretch, it's going to be really difficult to come back from, because, you know, there's some teams that you look at, not necessarily Super Bowl caliber teams, but could be trap games, going to Cleveland, going to Arizona, a late regular season game in Dallas this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot that could be the pitfall for the Eagles if they start off poorly.
Yeah, they're a team where momentum matters, positive and negative. Like, I think that is a character of this team. The other characteristic that they've taken on under Doug Peterson is that when their backs are against the wall, they respond. Like, that has been the case. The question's always been, why do you have to wait until you get to your back against the wall in order to respond like that? Fair criticism, very valid. No doubt about it, no argument. But that's kind of who they are at this point. I am hoping that they're not in the position where they have to put their backs against the wall. I'm not saying that they were like that in week two of 2017, but Doug Peterson sure coached like that. 610-632-0975. Jasper Lucas tweets in. He says, I sometimes fold my pizza slices, especially if it's a large slice like some in Ocean City. As for cupcakes, I eat them from the side, biting down from the top. I thought that was the way everyone eats them.
That's interesting, because my thought on that would be, if you turn it on its side, at some point you got to be like slamming the icing into the side of your face.
No, I think that he means like you hold the cupcake icing side up and eat it from the side so that you're taking your top teeth are biting into icing and your bottom teeth are biting into cake.
Got it.
I think that I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, Jasper. I think that's the way that he's saying it. And then he also said, I was one of the ones who bought into Lance Armstrong's story, hook, line, and sinker. I used to purchase the yellow Livestrong bracelets in 5-packs, wore them all the time. It was to the point where it was a must-wear accessory like a watch. Yeah, people were literally like, you'd get group shamed. Like, what, do you not care about cancer? Like, what do you say to that? Like, of course. Of course I care. Give me the bracelet. How much is this? Give it to me.
99 cents?
Yeah.
All right, I'm in.
And then like, somebody in the group would be like, well, actually, did you know that, like, such a low percentage of the profits go to, and everybody would, like, shut this person down. Be like, shut up, it's cancer. Like, literally, that was the way that it went. Unbelievable. The thing that makes me, this sounds so petty. One of the things that makes me the most upset about the whole thing is Lance Armstrong had the audacity, when Pete LaFleur is down on his luck, to get on him at the airport and be like, oh, I didn't give up, blah, 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 blah. I watched that movie and I actively, boo! Unbelievable. It's the worst part. It is the part that most, like, re-enters my life and makes me upset and inconveniences me. The scene in Dodgeball where Peter LaFleur is thinking about bailing out. The odds are stacked up against him, and Lance Armstrong's there at the airport. Hey, buddy, don't you have a game to play? Oh, man. It's like out of sight, out of mind, except I love Dodgeball. It's one of my favorite movies to watch. Just if it's on, I'll flip it on, sit back, chill. Average Joe's taking on the Purple Cobras and White Goodman. No, Lance gets involved, and then it's just like, come on, man. I don't know what to do. Just get irrationally angry at this kind of stuff. Maybe this is just the quarantine. Maybe my general irritability is like is rising. And I see Lance Armstrong, and I'm like, my blood boils up to my eyeballs. Maybe that's what it is. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter at Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic. Some easy answers, I think, to a question put out by Fantasy Football Today. Name a running back who isn't considered elite now but could be within the next 5 years. Miles Sanders, right? Like, I feel like that's a pretty simple answer. Miles Sanders could easily be an elite running back in the next 5 years. Who is not considered elite now?
Josh Jacobs.
Josh Jacobs for sure. I think there are some rookies, too, who could be good. Tony Pollard. Don't want to give, you know, Cowboys too much credit, but Tony Pollard could be really good somewhere, too. And Montgomery, right, from the Bears, looked pretty good, despite having nobody there to block.
Singletary, too.
Singletary, yeah. I think there are some backs that are not considered elite that are good. Jasper says that's my interpretation of the cupcake eating. That was right. Okay. And I'm getting pushback on the fold the pizza thing. How do you people eat pizza? It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
You can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Still can't watch it without getting angry at that part. And it's supposed to be like the tearjerker character development part, and all I can think of is, yeah, Lance, maybe you should give him some help. Maybe he'd be better at dodgeball if he had some of your assistance. That's all, you know, I can't get past it. It's Tyler Zuli, Joe Torti, 97.5, The Fanatic.
Honestly, the best part about that movie is, and the only reason it works is because I think they are in Vegas for the tournament. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna go take your money that you just gave me to not be on the team, and then I'm gonna go quote invest it
in
my team, and then we're gonna win, and I'm gonna make a ton of money. Capitalism at its finest.
Hey, I wanted to get into this too before we get back to the Eagles. And the question on the table regarding the Eagles, pretty simple and straightforward. They're kind of projected to be in the same spot as they were heading into the 2017 season. 9-7, maybe 10-6, maybe 8-8. How do you feel about this version, the 2020 version of the Philadelphia Eagles, relative to the 2017 version at this point in their respective seasons? Like before 2017 happened and the Eagles won the Super Bowl, how'd you feel about that team relative to the way that you feel about this team? Did you see this this hubbub with Joe Buck and this controversy regarding what Fox Sports is going to do with their games? So pretty much Joe Buck was getting interviewed and was misquoted in an interview by someone else who was checking this out. Basically, the premise was that Fox Sports is going to be planning on piping in artificial crowd noise for live game broadcasts, and they're examining ways to maybe put virtual fans in as well so that the stadiums look fuller and stuff like that. First of all, what do you think about this? Like, for me, I don't have a problem with crowd noise or not. I thought that some of the mixed martial arts stuff that's been going on recently without fans has been enhanced by not having fans there. I think that some of that stuff is really cool. Having college football or pro football or something like that, watching it on TV without any kind of crowd reaction or fans would be strange to me.
I think football is the one. Maybe hockey, too. Hockey, mm-hmm. perhaps, as well. But I think football might be the most important, especially in the college ranks when it comes to having fans. That is the biggest determinant, I guess, for the home team to have an advantage because fans are so raucous and rowdy.
Right.
Especially in the college scene where there's a ton of stadiums that surpass 80, 90, 100,000 seats.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I can only speak for the games that I've been to at Beaver Stadium, but I have to imagine the Big House is the same way. I have to imagine that Ohio State's stadium is the same way. I have to imagine that Bryant Denny's the same way. All of these stadiums are going to lose a little bit of their luster. It's going to be very difficult for the players to kind of get that energy, to get that up. So maybe this is a really good alternative until we can figure out a safe solution to getting the fans back in the state, in the stands.
I haven't even thought about this. What's going to happen with like player celebrations for first downs and stuff like that? Like so much of that I feel like is fueled by the fans, and we'll be able to hear the reactions, I would think, you know, from whoever's in control. There's probably going to be an ooh or an like, you know, those kind of things. But are like, you know, is Le'Veon Bell going to jump up and signal first down after he picks up a first down? Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
I feel
there.
Like this is the prime time spot for Philip Rivers with all his like G-rated sayings.
Uh-huh.
You know, the heck yes and the gosh gollies and whatnot. You know what I mean? Like, this is perfect for Philip Rivers. We're going to see how much of a nerd that guy really is.
Oh, that'd be just fantastic. I would love it. That would just be absolutely tremendous.
You know what also would be great? Because we've heard him say it before, and obviously he's not in the league anymore. The Andrew Luck-isms.
Oh, yeah.
Great hit, man.
It's like, dude.
Stop talking to me, weirdo.
So basically, Joe Buck said this, that they're looking at adding virtual fans, which I could leave. It won't strike me as strange if I'm watching a game and there's like a crowd hum and there's no fans that I can see. Like, that doesn't bother me. I'm not worried about that. But I guess Sports Illustrated tweeted that he said that both of these things were kind of like done deals. And, you know, that turned into a big hubbub. You want virtual fans in the stands?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think I would rather go with what the Korean Baseball League is doing and like the faces and things like that. I think it would look a little bit better.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I want the virtual fans.
I don't think I would either. So, video games have come a long way. crowds all look terrible. Like, they really do, regardless of the level of video game. And even if video games have made great strides, a lot of times they go four rows deep or something like that with the detailed fans, and then it looks worse, you know, the further back and further away that you go, obviously. You know, dedicate resources to the group that people are going to be looking at the most. I totally get that. But for me, that you're bordering on, like, uncanny valley situation where it's, like, a step too far. Like, the sound and the buzz in the stadium, I'm okay with that. I expect it to be there. But there are, like, open sections of stadiums all the time that don't have fans there, or people have moved or whatever. Especially in baseball, you see it happen all the time, right, where there are entire sections sometimes where people have just moved down or whatever. I don't need any virtual fans. I think that would be a step too far.
Well, and that's the thing is, too, you talk about, like, you know, especially football, maybe not so much, especially, you know, locally, because it doesn't matter if they're good or bad, the Eagles are going to sell out.
Yep.
You've seen it with other professional teams and other professional leagues where it's like, you know, the bottom bowl's half full and the ushers are bringing people down to make the camera look a little bit cleaner, to make it look a little bit more full.
They're covering up the upper bowl.
Right. You know, the Jags have literal sections of the upper bowl covered with Jaguar paraphernalia or whatever you want to call it. Memorabilia, I guess. It's going to be weird. I think it would be way weirder to try to do the virtual fan than it would to just do the empty seats.
So Matt Lombardo, by the way, following up regarding this DeAndre Baker, Quentin Dunbar stuff, said that according to a witness in the arrest warrant affidavit, DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar were at another party earlier in the week where they lost $70,000. Wednesday's incident arose after that argument where Baker was playing cards, flipped the table, and brandished a semi-automatic firearm. What in the world is happening? First of all, how many parties are we going to that are, you know, happening here in these uncertain times, as people say?
Shouldn't be going to a party anyway.
Right. Oh, man. Tyler Zuli's missing his knee hockey games. For goodness sake.
I can't tell you how. I didn't even get a chance to play in the league before we had to stop meeting.
Oh, jeez.
Wait, I think they played like two games. I didn't get a chance to be at either of them.
I got to say, that is an interesting move to be like, you know what? We could socially distance, or we could roll up to the party and rob everybody at gunpoint and then tell somebody to shoot the other dude who walked into the party. What in the world is this? This story I am deeply interested in, especially considering the fact that it doesn't necessarily affect the Eagles negatively. In fact, you know, with Baker being a first round selection by the New York Giants a year ago, not bad from the Eagles' perspective. It's objectively bad from a humanity perspective. You never want to hear, see, read anything like that. But from a football perspective, the Eagles thinking, there are worse teams that could have happened to, where your first round pick is doing this kind of insanity. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. 97.5 The Fanatic wants to see your quarantine coif or crazy beards. Go to 975thefanatic.com right now and submit a photo of your crazy hair or beard. We will feature your pick in our gallery every day. I was shamed into not wearing a hat today because Tyler called me out for wearing hats.
Listen, so. I'm a hat. I wear a hat every time.
You're a hatsman. I understand.
I'm not calling you out.
But
well,
I felt like that. I felt called out because you said something. So now
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's not you. It's the way that I received it. But now I'm showcasing my home quarantine haircut situation. I'm putting it on display for all to see. So if I can do that, you can send us your quarantine coif, 975thefanatic.com. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. On Twitter, it's at Joe Torti, at 975thefanatic, and at Tyler Zuli. So the other thing that I wanted to bring up today, because we haven't gotten a ton of this. We've been kind of getting into some other stuff. I saw this on NBC Sports Philadelphia, and I didn't even know this is a possibility. But the article is titled, "What if the Sixers had traded Julius Erving for Michael Jordan?" Did you read this?
I saw the headline. I haven't had a chance to read the article yet.
So in the book Pat Williams' Tales from the Philadelphia 76ers, former Sixers owner Harold Katz said, "I thought I had a deal with Jonathan Kovler, then the principal owner of the Bulls, for the third pick in exchange for Julius Erving. Rod Thorne, then the GM of the Bulls, seemed to confirm the essence of Katz's story on ESPN 1000's Cap and Company show. He noted the Bulls had really strong offers from the Sixers and Mavericks on draft day in 84, as well as lesser offers from other teams." So, just so we know, this means that Chicago would have taken a 34-year-old Julius Erving, and the Sixers would have 3 and 5, which is to say that they could have taken Jordan and Barkley.
Wow.
Watch out. So the team is this. And Erving, by the way, averaged 18 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists over his last 3 seasons. The Bulls never happen, obviously. Like, Michael Jordan's the biggest part of that. But the biggest thing is that the Sixers do happen. Because as a rookie, Jordan plays next to Barkley, Maurice Cheeks, Moses Malone, Andrew Toney, and Bobby Jones. Would 21-year-old Jordan have been better than 31-year or 34-year-old Erving that season? Probably at least as good.
Close, yeah.
Close, right? Did they lose to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals that year?
It's quite possible.
It's possible. I don't know, when he got his first playoff crack at the Celtics in the 86 postseason, Jordan, he scored 49 points in Game 1 and 63 in Game 2. So there's a chance that things could have gone quite differently. When I read this, I was like, is this even a possibility? But now that it, you know, it turns out that it is, or it was, my heart hurts. Things are so different.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, though. I mean,
yeah, but it was something that they thought was in place. Like, it was a deal that they thought they had. I get hindsight's 20/20 completely. That's like people talking about, how could you pass on Klay Thompson? How could you, like, hindsight's 20/20 with Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and stuff. If they wanted 3 and they wanted Jordan for Julius Erving and they thought they had a deal, that makes me sad. I never knew that story. It's pretty crazy. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torty Show. We are rolling on until 10 o'clock. So keep it locked right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torty Show, 97.5, The Fanatic. We're hanging out until 10 o'clock. Matthew Farron tweets in, "Pizza fold is a must. Cupcakes and icing, I'm out." Peter LaFleur quote, "Almost as amazing as the 17 bird season." Appreciate you listening, man. Let's go to Sean in Newark next on The Fanatic. What's up, Sean?
Hey, good evening, Joe.
How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing all right. I want to help you out a little bit with the Erving for Jordan trade.
Yes.
I'm an old head, so I remember this kind of stuff.
Okay.
The trade isn't Erving for Jordan. It's a swap of the picks. In other words, the Sixers are picking 5th. The Bulls are picking 3rd. The Sixers would like to move up 2 slots. And we'll give you Erving if you let us move up 2 slots. So the Bulls would get back Erving and our number 5 pick, which would be Charles Barkley.
I see.
And in return, then we get Jordan. And when you look at the trade that way, then it makes a little more sense.
That makes total sense. Like, the other way is just straight up thievery.
Right.
It didn't
exactly.
make any sense. Okay.
But it makes sense for both teams. So the Bulls look at, like, you know, they didn't know Jordan was going to be the GOAT. And everybody knew Barkley, you know, was also projected to be a pretty decent player.
Sure.
So that was, and so was Sam Perkins, who was the player picked 4th in between.
Mm-hmm.
What's crazy that year is that the Sixers almost ended up with the first and the second pick in the entire draft. They owned the Cleveland Cavaliers, number one, unprotected. And back then, all the picks were unprotected. And they also owned the L.A. Clippers, number one, unprotected. And at about 40 to 50 games into the season, the Clippers had the worst record in the Western Conference, and the Cavaliers had the worst record in the Eastern Conference. And back then, there was no lottery. So the West, the worst team in the West, flipped a coin with the worst team in the East. So that would have put the 76ers in a coin flip for them with themselves for the number one and number two overall pick, which means we would have had Hakeem Olajuwon and Michael Jordan.
Delicious.
To add to the team that already had Moses Malone, Bobby Jones, Julius Erving, and Cheeks would have injured Andrew Toney.
Sean, it just tortures you, doesn't it?
That was incredible that year because everyone realized it. There was following that, we knew we had those picks, and you're looking in the paper, you're like, holy crap, like, L.A.'s is the worst record, and Cleveland's worst record, we got the first and second picks, and, you know, people knew that during the year, you know, and then both teams went on these ridiculous win streaks at the end of the year, and we ended up with 5-10, which ended up being Charles Barkley at 5, and Leon Wood, who ended up basically being known for being a referee, he was our pick at 10.
Mm. Wow. Well, Sean, thanks for clearing that up, man. Appreciate it. That article from NBC Sports Philadelphia did not make that clear, and certainly explored the possibility of having everybody there together. But if that was the actual trade, then that, of course, makes a lot more sense considering Irving was 34 years old at the time. Although I have to say this, and this is with all due respect to all players involved, LeBron James is 35. Ahead of this past draft, could he have fetched the third pick in the draft? He probably could have.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, and I know that Irving was closer to the end. Like, Irving played three more seasons, I think. LeBron's got more than, like, I think he has more than 2 years left. He's probably got three.
Yeah, I think
or
he's probably
got
five.
Yeah,
I would think.
I think he could play later. It's not outside the realm of possibility that could have, that LeBron one for one could have fetched it. Especially if the Lakers are picking in the top five, yeah, you'd like to have LeBron and the fifth, but if you just get LeBron for the third, I bet that could have worked.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. Now, LeBron is probably better than Irving at 34.
Well, and that's the thing, is if you're going to move up two spots, you have to be under the perfect scenario where you know the guy is going to hit. And the guy's going to hit big, because even if you give up 4 years of LeBron or 4 years of Irving, I know the two aren't quite comparable, but they're close.
I pulled him because I knew he was close to that age.
Right.
I was
like, if you're going to give up 4 years of either of those guys, the guy moving up two spots, literally two spots in the draft, guy's got to hit.
Got to nail it. Yeah. Got to nail it. 610-632-0975. Turns out, with all due respect to Charles Barkley, that's still worth it, right? Like Julius Erving and Charles Barkley effectively for Jordan. Turns out that's still worth it in hindsight now.
Yes, of course.
You know, that's where the hindsight being 2020 all comes in. But I did not know that there was a good chance that one and two in that draft could have ended up with the Sixers because of the Cavs and the Clippers picks.
That would have been, and that's at a time, of course, there's no social media, there's no 17 sports channels, there's no round-the-clock news. I would have loved to have been able to follow just the newspapers because everybody read box scores, everybody read stats.
Of course, yeah.
Everybody followed the standings. That would have been amazing and sad at the same time to pick up the news every day for 4 months and go, yo, the Sixers might have pick one and two with this squad. Like, they're going to be loaded. And then just kind of watch those picks deteriorate. And 5-10 is a good spot.
But it's not,
but
one,
it's
and
not
two.
One and two.
Not in that draft.
You imagine why, especially with the games out on the West Coast, I don't even know if they made the paper. You may have had to have waited to the night edition.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Had to wait till the next day. Whew, man. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation.
Talk about being a fan of a crappy franchise for the most part, being a Clippers fan.
Famous for being bad.
Like, that's got to suck.
Yeah.
Especially when there's a team with not only in your state, not only in your division, in literally in the same arena that you play in, that is historically a top two franchise of all time.
Well, and so I do believe this in my heart of hearts. I don't think it's an accident that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard wanted to end up there, because they were like there's a chance that if we do some stuff here, you turn this into the best team that the Clippers have ever had. You turn into the best players in Clippers franchise history. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you do there because the cupboard's so bare. It's all not exactly the same. Similar to LeBron in Cleveland, right? Like, Cleveland wasn't a hotbed of elite-level basketball talent. They were really good players. But LeBron came in, and, like, you knew that there was a chance that he could end up being the best thing that ever happened to Cleveland basketball-wise, and it turns out that that's true. I don't know how many places are like that left. You know, like, how many places that I consider to be, like, the Wild West, unsettled territory, you know?
Well, at least from teams that have somewhat of a history, because, I mean, you've got younger teams, like the Raptors up until last year.
Right.
That's not a great example because their franchise history was only 20 years.
Right, yeah.
You know, the Minnesota Timberwolves is the same way. They're historically, I mean, if you look at just winning percentage, the Minnesota Timberwolves are the worst team in NBA history.
But also, they've got Kevin Garnett written right. all over them.
Right, so at like least there's one thing to yeah. identify with.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of goes back to our conversation that we had the other day about moving into the Forum. You know, it's like, right. imagine sharing that historic venue and then moving into the Staples Center, another historic or going to be historic venue when it's all said and done, and just constantly being trumped by the team with another team within your city.
Yeah, the bigger brother, effectively. Yeah, all of the teams that jump to mind are new. You know what I mean? Like, I think
right.
like the Pelicans, right? Zion's got a chance there, maybe, but that's new history.
The
that's,
Hornets, for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, Hornets, Bobcats, Hornets. You know, actually, it would have been Hornets, Pelicans, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, and then the reincarnation of the Hornets.
Right. That was one of the stranger chapters in NBA history.
Super
like, that
weird.
Whole, like, shuffling there. I still have to think about how that went to keep it all straight.
So weird.
Yeah.
The Bobcats.
But so, in comparison, right? Think about what Embiid and Simmons are trying to do now. Like, think about what Embiid and Simmons are trying to make an imprint on and the city in which and the organization in which you're right. trying to make the imprint.
Right.
Very unlikely that you're going to end up as the top individual player in a city that has had Wilt and Dr. J and Iverson and Barkley here. Team-wise, like, some of those teams that the Sixers have had have just been unbelievable. The sure. Moses team, like, that's hard.
Well, you know, you could say the same thing about that 08 Celtics team, you know, the team up of Garnett and Pierce yeah. and Allen. They were unreal. And Rondo, they were a great team. But they'll always be in the shadow of Larry Bird and Bill Russell.
Cousy.
Yeah, yeah, they'll never be. I mean, we sit here and remember them because that was kind of, me, you know, for you and I, that was kind of our growing up. That was one of the teams we kind of grew up in. We're like, wow, that sure. team's legit. But for the older generation, I mean, they look at them and they're probably like, I wonder what they feel like that about them in Boston.
Sure.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, I'm glad they won.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.
It's probably how like Duke views their different championship teams. Like the Jahlil Okafor, Tyus Jones team. Like that team was all right. They won the national championship. What are right. you talking about? Yeah, they were all right though.
They weren't Leitner.
That was a nice team. Yeah, exactly. They weren't Jay Williams and Shane Battier.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that and for a city that has been devoid of a Super Bowl for 50 years, mm-hmm. I think that the next one and the one after that, and, you know, God willing, all these championships to follow, everyone in this city is going to go, yeah, that's great, but 41-33.
I think you're absolutely right. That is something that holds a place in lore forever. You got to watch it. Pretty awesome. I don't think that that'll ever be overwritten. I don't think so.
It's kind of funny that we bring this whole thing up and we talk about that Bobcats team.
Yeah, Kwame Brown.
I wonder, is there going to be a generation or maybe two, probably two generations after ours, that look at that Bobcats team that the same way that maybe our generation looks at a team like, you know, the Seattle Pilots who were in Seattle for a season before becoming the Brewers. Like, it's just going to be a total afterthought. And if you didn't know who they were, you may not even know that it was a franchise in the NBA.
Interesting. Yeah, that is entirely possible.
Because I think the Hornets are there to stay in Charlotte. I don't think they're going anywhere.
I think so, too.
So there's going to be like a 10-year window where there was a franchise in Charlotte not called the Hornets.
Not called the, right, exactly.
It's going to be weird.
Very weird. 610-632-0975. 9 o'clock hours coming your way next. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.